I know maybe, 30, 40% of this group, and it's nice to see new faces, because these days I choose my where I talk for a couple reasons. One is the size of the audience, or the importance of the audience, or the difference of the audience. So you can figure out which one you are. And so some of you may have seen some of this, but I was asked to do sort of the overview, the keynote, and what I'm going to start with some things like, you know, what is nano? What are the products? Why should we be interested? And then there will be a lot of folks in this conference who will be speaking more to the specifics of these governance issues. And I was so glad to hear Leslie say the word governance. And the other word I was so glad to hear her say was life cycle, because these are two concepts that we really need to know when we look at nanotechnology. So let me, I don't have a lot of time here, so let me figure out where the next one is. Okay, so this is what I'm talking about. What's nano, why is industry interested, and why, what might change with respect to industry, what types of products are there, what kinds of governance approaches are there, what might this group think about. I took out a lot of the governance slides because I saw who else was speaking, and I didn't need to do that. So let's talk about nano. Nano is very, very visual. I mean, it's just so cool because we can have all of these nice kinds of pictures that are real pictures under microscopes, and that are, you know, pictures of stuff that, and then depictions of things. So it's great visual things. But let's get down to what it is, because I haven't got a lot of time. This is the NNI definition, the National Nanotech Initiative. And remember, that is this initiative is not a group, it's a concept, let's say. There are three parts to this definition. The first has to do with size, and we arbitrarily are working within 1 to 100 nanometers. Now I'm going to talk about what a nanometer is, because some of you may not know. Some of you, I mean, I know there are physicists in this room, so pardon my elementary descriptions here. The second part is that within this size range, there are novel properties and function because of the size, not because of the composition, but because of size. When we talk about chemicals, if we have a piece of paper, you know, a bunch of cellulose, this has certain properties at the bulk, and it will have a certain, no, this is not a pure material, but let's assume it's a plastic or something. It has a certain melting point, it has certain magnetic properties, it has certain stress, strain, you know, strength, you can mold it in a certain way. And this piece of paper, I'm not going to tear it up, but if I tear it and keep tearing it and tearing it, every one of those little pieces will behave with the same kinds of properties. When we get down to the nanoscale, it doesn't happen. You can change the length, and it changes the sort of melting point. You can change the length, it changes the stress and strain properties. You can change the length, it will change its electronic conductivity, or it will change its magnetic properties. So it doesn't, at the nanoscale, matter does not behave the same way it does at a larger macro scale. So that's what we're talking about, novel properties. The next part is the ability to control or manipulate at the atomic scale. You saw that little IBM atoms, they were up in this corner, and that's the, Chinese symbol for atom. But those atoms were actually moved around. So we were manipulating at the atomic scale. We can see atoms now. So keep that in mind. You couldn't, you know, remember when you took chemistry and you took, you know, high school stuff, you couldn't see an atom. But we can now. And we eventually will be moving to our manufacturing where we are actually manipulating atoms. So think about that. You can bring, why do we make materials? Why do we make chemicals? Or how do we make them? We bring atoms together. Normally they're in a solution. And so we get these atoms together and they react and we get something else. Now, we don't have to put them into solution. We can sort of push them next to each other. Now, what does that mean? From an environmental standpoint, it means we could maybe make things without waste. Because when we put all these atoms, you know, they're all random in this solution, and they make other things besides what we want. So there is very, very powerful technology here to make new kinds of matter and make it without as much waste. So how big is a nanometer? Well, the official 10 to the minus 9th. I mean, some people don't even know what. What does that mean, minus 9th? A whole bunch of zeros on the bottom. Atoms, I think most people have a concept of how big an atom is. I don't know why, but we sort of, you know, think. You sort of think about it, and you can figure out how big an atom is. Yes. And so atoms are less than a nanometer. They're in angstroms, which is a tenth of a nanometer. And so we get things like a, you know, water, and it's a two-tenths of a nanometer across. These silicon atoms are spaced in tenths of nanometers apart. And then we get over here to this micrometer scale, and we all know about pollen right now. It's affecting me. I don't know about anybody else here, but we have some idea about blood cells and in the environment, fly ash, certainly. But when we get to the nanometer scale, I think the one of the best things is to think about is DNA. And I think most people have a concept here. And it's a couple nanometers across. So it's a bunch of atoms, and they all add up to a couple nanometers. It's really small. Now, this I've stolen from the Germans because I think it gives you an idea of the variety of nanomaterials, and it also gives you an idea of the variety of the properties of those materials. So we have what's in here, capsules, quantum dots, tubes, particles, aerosols, and they can be dispersed in various things. They can be natural or unintentionally released, or they can be manufactured. Now, when we talk about nanotechnology here, we're talking about the stuff that we purposefully make, that we purposefully engineer and manufacture. The nanoparticles that come out of diesel fumes, the nanoparticles that come out of volcanoes, the nanoparticles that bacteria produce, we don't care about right now. I mean, we do care about them, but that's a different bucket. So, chemical composition, they can be atoms themselves, metals, elements, oxides of these, polymers, carbon, semiconductors, biomass, etc. They can exist as single particles, or they can be clumped together in aggregates or agglomerates. Most nanoparticles on the market have some kind of surface coating to keep them apart. Otherwise, they would all be clumped together. So if you want to keep them nano, you put something on them so that they don't interact with their neighbors. And then different kinds of shapes, crystalline, spheres, etc. So keep in mind, different kinds of materials. So when somebody says, I've got a nano material, I've got a nanoparticle, it's not necessarily the same as what somebody else is talking about. So keep in mind, different composition, different materials, different sectors, different industries, and these are my little cartoons here, but the auto industry, consumer products, sports industry, chemical industry, medical, this is the communications industry, and of course the information technology, so everybody likes this one. But also keep in mind that nanotechnology is not one thing. It always interacts with other technologies. And we are now looking at the meaning and the science and engineering of the converging technologies, the NBIC convergence, nano-bio-info-cogno. And I'm not going to go into that. We're just talking about nanotechnology today. But keep in mind it does go further. But this is very important, this concept, not a single material, not a single sector or industry. So, why is industry interested in this? I talked about properties, and I'm just going to show you this slide, but you can see that there are many different properties, and it has many different, these properties has very different applications in the products into which those materials that have those properties will be embedded. Okay, so we have a cartoon. Leslie had hers, here's mine, so it's just a silly thing showing how small it is. And this is a problem. We can't see that, I mean, we can't analyze a lot of this easily. So we cannot analyze these materials, so maybe we won't be able to find them. And that's a challenge to the scientific and technical community. But as we're doing all of this research, we're patenting like crazy, and I'm sure the lawyers in this room are getting really happy because that means patent law, and that's something to get your hands on. So. But you can see that there are lots of action in this area. I'm stealing from Mike Rocco, and I think this is a really good chart. And Mike Treader has a fifth generation. Where we are right now are what they call passive nanostructures. These are the dumb nanomaterials. They don't do anything except be themselves. They are put into plastic matrices to make better plastic composites. They may have some electrical properties, so they're put into some electronics. So these are just the single kinds of structures, coatings. Well, you can see here, okay? In the active nanostructures, which is where we're moving now, targeted drugs, actuators, 3D kinds of transistors, you can see a lot of electronic products here. And then we get into systems of these nanosystems. So these have more than one function usually. Let's take an environmental example. You've got a nanoparticle. This part of it senses the pollutant. This part of it kills it off or destroys it. So we have these point-and-shoot kinds of nanoparticles. These are these second structures. And point-and-shoot drugs, too. Dendrimers, they go up to the cancer cell. Norris, correct me if I say something wrong here. They can go up to a cancer cell and deliver the drug specifically. So it's sort of a multifunctional kind of system. So we have these systems, and then we have systems of systems where we start designing things that will interface at the micro scale, which is 1,000 times the nanoscale, and then eventually up to something that we can interface with. So, and to take Mike's fifth generation, this is where we actually do manufacture by pushing those atoms together and making new materials and have little molecular motors. So that's really a simplification. Okay, so let's take a look at the magnitude of this. This is the business school. So the middle estimate is about $1.1 trillion worth of goods and services by 2010. And this is sort of the breakdown that NSF has, mainly in materials, in those particles that will go into something else. Then most of it, at this point, will go into the electronics industry. Pharmaceuticals will be a big deal. Chemicals, aerospace, and then everything else. So. Okay, so what types of products are out there? NASDAQ, you know, you can find them all over the place. I don't have 3M there. I have GM, but I know there's a 3M person here. Who else did I leave out on this list? But anyhow, it's not just those little startups. It's not the guys making nanomaterials in their garage. It's also all of the big guys are into this because it's a big deal. They don't talk about being nanotech companies because they're everything else, but there is a great percentage of them that is nanotech companies. Now, where I am on detail now at the Woodrow Wilson Center, we put together a consumer products inventory. And it was basically looking at that those 200 plus products that you could actually buy. And so we got went to the websites actually and looked for self-identified nanotechnology products. And this is what we came out with. Now these categories are the categories that the Consumer Union uses. And actually we talked to the Consumer Union a couple weeks ago, which is really interesting because consumer groups are getting themselves educated about nanotechnology. But these are their categories. And just to give you an idea, this health and fitness, you can see these are not really drugs. These are the kinds of things that they consider consumer products. So, you know, the nanotech pants and ties and sporting goods. There was an article in the Washington Post about, you know, the billion-dollar golf ball or something, because some of the products that we've gotten out of this technology are silly, unless you're a golfer. But
or a hockey player.
Or a hockey player.
Yeah, if you look behind you, that's
oh, okay, yeah.
It's a hockey stick.
It's a carbon nanotube hockey stick.
Yeah, composite, where they went in there and made it stronger and lighter, and they probably didn't improve your game, though, did they? But you got the coolest hockey stick on the court. Cosmetics, personal care, sunscreens, filtration. So these are those. And I just put some pictures up. There's some cosmetics in there, sunscreens, paints, waxes, anti-fog stuff, and then a whole slew of products, short socks. Knee guards, there's the golf balls, paints, etc. So, lots of things. The nano iPod is right there in the front too. Okay, so this is a different list compiled by Small Times, and there were 1,143 products on this list, but these are not necessarily consumer products. Most of this is materials. 23% of this are the things that make up the industry, like, and I'll show you another slide that'll tell you what that is. Products that help manufacture nanomaterials. A lot of tests and measurements. Some end user. This is where the consumer stuff is, and then a very small amount of biomedical that will be growing as we develop more drugs and devices. So this is sort of, it's a different way of looking at it, but these are the kinds of things that went into that in a little bit different way. I aggregated a lot. So the materials are here. That's most of it. There are measurement for tests, you know, stress, strain, all of the mechanical properties, components that go into other things, the LEDs that we are, you know, have really changed the industry. All of the EMs, the electron microscopes. Here are some of those. Beer bottles, a lot of people sort of focus on that. There are nanoclays in Miller beer bottles to help make them darker and also lighter to give them more strength. Software to control all of this capital equipment here. And then these are the old therapeutic systems. There are, and Norris can probably say, what are their... Maybe there were two that were FDA approved in this list, and there are probably many more now, so, and many more in the pipeline. So I don't want to put you on the spot. You've got the information, I know. But in these products, it's mostly the electronics industry that is in the lead, trying to get the smaller transistor, trying to keep Moore's Law going. And I just put a couple things that I pulled out of the MIT press. This came out, I think, last week. You know, a little tiny zinc oxide nanowires, and when they move, they make current. So you can imagine putting something on your, you know, just on you, and you're moving around, and you're, you know, you're generating current that can power the battery that powers your cell phone or whatever. And then another kind of battery that is, these are all research products. And this one I love because we are moving toward this Samsung Motorola. These are the flexible screens. So, you know, we don't have a solid computer like this. We just roll it up in our pocket and, you know, stick it in like a newspaper. And then we've got the, you know, the central processing unit, CPU, in some other pocket as we miniaturize the circuitry even more. And we're miniaturizing hard drives, too, so we can do that. So what kind of governance approaches are there? And I'm going to go through the official governance in case you're not, in case you don't know this, if you haven't got it memorized yet. Okay. The NNI is a conglomerate out of basically the Office of Science and Technology Policy part of the administration. And this is your civics lesson. Congress and OMB are part of this whole NNI structure. The President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology are the advisors to the NNI, National Nano Initiative. Now, this basically works through this committee, the Nanoscale Science Engineering Technology Subcommittee of the OSTP. This is comprised of government agencies that support research and development in nanotechnology with some others that have interest or they have some part of their mission deals with something that might be affected by nanotechnology. So many independent agencies, shut off your cell phones, and departments here. So there are 20, depends on how you're counting, 23, 26 agencies that sit on this subcommittee. There is a subgroup of this that actually Norris chairs, the NEHI. Now, if you came from the Midwest, that is soda. But if you're in Washington, it is the Nanotech Environment and Health Impacts Subcommittee of the OSTP. There are also, and this group works to communicate and coordinate and look at research in EHS areas. And then there are industry subgroups. They're called C-bands, C-band, I don't know. Anyhow, it's an advisory kind of thing. And the chemical and semiconductor industries have put forward roadmaps in nanotechnology. There's one in manufacturing. And the chemical and the semiconductor have also subcommittees on EHS issues, so they've really looked at this. Vision, cool stuff, goals. We'll look at the fourth one, support responsible development of nanotechnology. 2005 budget, $1.2 billion of federal research. Now we have about the same in industrial research too, and right now it seems that Europe, Asia, and the U.S. are pretty much equal in the amount of research dollars that they spend on nanotechnology. And about 3% of that was spent on EHS issues. So. Okay, some research, and I put us first because we've been doing this since about 2000, where we looked at first grants in environmental applications. We brought on two partners to begin with for implications and then another partner this year. NIH is doing a lot of nanoscale stuff as an adjunct to their drug research. NIOSH is doing research in its own labs. The National Tox Program is looking at specifics. And NSF, DOE, and DOD have their own, or are supporting outside research centers where researchers can go and use the equipment. Okay, you've probably seen this, and I'm going to try to wrap up in the last part real fast. This is sort of what we need to look at from a regulatory standpoint, and then these are the agencies that are involved in each one of these aspects of the topics. So you can see it gets very complex. There is not a single one-stop shop for looking at regulation and research in the environmental health and safety aspects of nanotechnology. Okay, so what might this group think about? I'm not going to do this. Here we're talking about problems and the fact that we send the newspapers out to report on a fire, but they don't care about a sprinkler system. So, you know, if you have a problem, it's interesting. If you're looking at prevention, it's dull and boring. So human nature is really a big part of what happens. And I just wanted to show you this because it shows that we have a lot more to worry about, a lot more to worry about in prevention and our governance. Because this is just from the semiconductor industry. In the 80s, they were using 11 different chemical or elements, atoms, in their materials. 90s, 15 elements. Now we're using over 60 elements. We don't know a lot about these materials. And so that's a big issue, different environmental and health impacts. They don't call rare earths rare because they're common. And so we're working with a lot of rare earths now. There's also a resource problem. You know, do we have enough of this stuff to go around? And this is what's near and dear to my heart right now. But I'm not going to go through it because I am running out of time. But you can divide this into two issues: production and products, making nanomaterials in a green fashion, using nanotechnology to green up current industries, using it to help clean up the environment, and then indirectly, if we get better energy, we have less environmental impact. If we have less materials, we have less environmental impact. And we need this full systems approach, and that's the life cycle. And we need to look at policy incentives that could help develop green nanoproducts and manufacturing techniques. Not a lot of people are talking about this, so some issues in governance, people will start looking at, or you know, going more into detail here, measuring, defining the standard stuff, keeping up with the development. How do we fix our institutions so that they can keep up? How do we characterize risk? Standards. We've got folks here who will talk about standards. We have standards in place that might help with respect to EHS issues. I'm going to go over all of these. So, three issues to watch right now, and you've probably read about these in the news: the magic nano stuff in Germany, the call for the FDA ban on nanocosmetics, and the call for EPA to regulate nano silver as a pesticide in washing machines. So, I will not be able to talk about the International Risk Governance Council, but this is a group that is meeting internationally to look at different ways of governing nanotechnology and some parting thoughts. It's going to change all of our existing technologies. We need to think ahead about the impacts and how to manage them, and we must plan for the full life cycle, and we need a rational governance of this new technology. It offers us the opportunity to do it right in the first place. It's an opportunity we don't want to miss. Thank you.